Welcome to the Sunday Morning Linux Review with Tony Bemis and Matt Enders. This is episode 15 for the week of January 22nd, 2012.
So what is this, the fourth show of the year?
Is it the already?
Time flies.
Yeah, the 24th? No.
It's the
22nd.
And
whatever.
The Detroit Auto Show is going on. I took Friday off, and I have tomorrow off, so it's a long weekend.
Did you go past the sink?
I went to the show.
The sink display over at Ford and...
I did not. I purposely skipped that part. Although they have all sorts of electric cars there this year. It's really cool.
Yeah, I'm...
You can go downstairs and ride in an electric car. So you should do that.
Yeah.
Although by the time
I'm planning on going there today.
You know what? If Americans wanted electric cars, we would have electric cars in all over the place.
Well, look at it this
way. We don't want electric cars.
I disagree. We want electric cars provided that they're...
You forgot your tinfoil hat, Tony.
No, I'm serious.
No, I think...
There are many things in auto technologies that has been cut down, and it all deals with gas mileage.
Mm-hmm. And that's why the Strait of Hormuz, the possible closing of the Strait of Hormuz, would have no impact on us if we had electric vehicles.
You know what? It wouldn't have any impact on us either if Obama wouldn't have freaking squelched the pipeline from Canada.
No, you know why he did that? It's because Nebraska didn't want it running through their wetlands.
A huge aquifer.
And the company that wanted to run it through there, they never made a new plan to go around it. And so he's like, I'm not going to approve it unless there's a new plan.
So they forced the issue.
Baloney.
I think we got him. Anyway, speaking of netbooks and that type of thing, I don't know if either one of you have seen the Asus Transformer.
No.
But that is a sweet netbook.
I read something about it a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, because what you can do is can turn it into a tablet.
The keyboard slides out of the bottom.
It doesn't just slide out of the bottom. You can completely detach it, and so it becomes a true tablet.
Yeah.
Or you can attach it, and it becomes a netbook.
Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
In December, Mary, I did a Christmas show, like a Gadgets for Geeks kind of a thing.
Oh.
And that was one of the things I mentioned was that Transformer.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it is very nice.
Is it just USB or is it like its own proprietary plug, I wonder?
Except the one I thought slid out like a phone, like it was like a giant phone. Like it looked like this, and then the keyboard slid out like the way some of them, like the way the phone.
Yeah, it looks to me to be more of a, well, at least from this
That was called the slider, I think. You're right. The Transformer had a keyboard that attached and detached.
Mm-hmm.
But the slider is the one that I thought was super cool because it had a full QWERTY keyboard that actually slid out of the tablet, Mary.
Nice.
So.
Yeah, because I'm a touch typist, and so that's why tablets are a little bit of a challenge because then I'm kind of turned into a hunt and peck person. Well, not so much hunt because I know where the key is. But, you know, I just got to get my finger on there, right?
I only ever type with four fingers, so. No matter what I'm typing on.
I mean, they're not all on the same hand, are they?
No. Sometimes they are if I'm eating.
All right.
I never got that hunt and peck because it would take me so long to do this. If I just stick my hand on there, I can type.
Exactly. I never learned how to touch type.
I had to have those little home row knobs, otherwise I'm lost.
Yeah, your index finger goes on there. That's right. Otherwise, it's gibberish.
Yeah, it's like this keyboard that Matt gave us to use for the show.
Doesn't have that.
I have to look down at the keyboard all the time.
The keys. You know, what you can do is just put a little drop of some kind of strong glue on there.
Oh, so it makes like a little knob.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good idea,
see?
Mary.
Yeah. That's why we pay Mary the big bucks.
That's right. Helpful hints from Mary. So Matt, you know, this week you're the news guy, and there was some pretty big news going on this week.
Well, there was a lot in the kernel this week,
right.
too.
That's right. All right. So we may end up having the rest of the show devoted to you.
We'll see.
All right.
Matt, what's happening with the kernel?
With the kernel news, we actually had a release candidate this week. Linus Torvalds announced the release of 3.3-RC1 on Thursday, January 19th at 2358 UTC. This officially closed the merge window. However, as part of the announcement, he did say that if you had your pull request in on time and he overlooked it, either intentionally or accidentally, you had 2 days to marshal your argument for why it should have been included. He also said that if you just did not get your request in on time, then... And that's what the email actually said.
How is that spelled?
P-H-H-H-T-H-R-T-H-T-P-T.
With an exclamation.
I copied that and pasted it right from the announcement email. And here's how the changes break out. There were 20% architecture updates spread across ARM, PowerPC, MIPS, and x86. 60% drivers broken out across networking with mostly wireless, staging, media, sound, including getting rid of struct sysdev, whatever that is, and 20% random stuff.
Hmm.
So with that release, the mainline kernel is now 3.3-RC1. Under stable releases, we only had one from Greg this week, and he announced the release of 3.1.10 on Wednesday, January 18th at 1546 UTC. There were 58 files changed, 589 files inserted, and 280 files deleted. And my kernel quote of the week is from Linus Torvalds himself. Anyway, it's out now, and I'm taking off early for a weekend of beer, skiing, and poker. Not necessarily in that order. Don't drink and ski. No email.
Just lots of poker.
So, that was the kernel news.
So he lives in California now, right?
Correct. For many, many years.
Every time I think of him, I think of like Sweden or wherever.
Finland.
Finland. Yeah, where he's
from.
But
he speaks Swedish because he's part of that minority of Finnish people who are of Swedish descent and actually speak Swedish.
Oh, all right.
just a little aside there.
I didn't know that. So, I would suppose, being out in California, you'd go up to what, to the Sierra Nevadas to ski?
I would imagine. When I lived in San Diego, we
used... You had to drive far to ski?
Not actually, because you could drive up into the wintertime, you could drive up into the mountains. You could go swimming on the beach and skiing in the same day.
Hmm. Wow.
That's pretty cool. Nifty.
Spending a lot of time in the car, though.
yes, you would. It was theoretically possible to swim on the beach and go skiing in the same day.
Wow, that's pretty good.
You know, the drive through those mountains are nice. I did that. I flew into Ontario and then drove down to a little town north of San Diego, and I had to go through the mountains.
Yeah, well, no, Ontario, Ontario, California is way up by Sacramento. Yep.
No, it's by L.A.
It's L.A.
It's like there's two airports for L.A. There's the L.A. airport and then the Ontario is like the other.
There's a city called Ontario, California that's up by Sacramento.
You need to quit using Bing for your maps.
No. Because I had to spend a month in the San Francisco Bay Area one time when I was working for a company and go around to this retail chain that we were doing some work for and do these overnight jobs. And I remember there was a Home Depot. Oh, sorry, excuse me. There was a retailer that we were working
for. Big box
retailer. And it was in Ontario, and it was up there. We didn't go anywhere near San Diego. We didn't even get anywhere near Los Angeles. We stayed up in the Bay Area in Sacramento, and that's it.
Well, I'll tell you, Ontario, California is located in San Bernardino County down near L.A.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm.
Then I am completely mistaken. I would have bet. Mm-hmm. You should have just bet me, Mary. You should have looked it up and then bet me.
Yeah,
because I would have bet you that there was.
I could have gotten a breakfast out of it.
You could have. That there was a retailer in. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm surprised.
That's okay though.
My memory is usually better than that, but my wife has been telling me lately that I am having mental acuity issues. So.
Uh-oh, that doesn't sound good. All right, so that's your kernel news?
That's the kernel news.
All right. So, I think I updated my desktop this week, and I think there was a kernel. It was a kernel update.
Well, it depends on what kernel you're running and how quickly your distribution gets it out. Because, like I said,
Kubuntu? Pretty quick.
Because, like I said, Greg did release a stable kernel this week. So
Yeah, Ubuntu's still on the 3.0. Kernel. Mm-hmm. I did updates this week.
Did you? Yep, yeah, that's probably the same thing. So,
So I don't. Yeah, I'm not sure how fast they get the kernels updated for the
right. How packaging? How fast they get it out into their system?
Right.
All right. Well, thanks, Matt. That was good news. Interesting news, I should say. And
yeah.
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
All right, so with the distros, releases this week is really slim. There's two total, and one of them was actually released last Sunday.
But after we recorded the show.
That's right. It's Artistix 1.2. It actually looks really cool. I tried looking up what the differences between Artistix and Ubuntu Studio was, and I couldn't find a whole lot of differences because I didn't see anybody doing specific comparison on them. But what I did notice is Artistix has a lot more applications in it. I saw on DistroWatch it says something like 1,200 programs.
Under the idea that more is better.
Right. Well, it gives you a choice. You can choose what you want to use. Although, right. If you don't know what anything does or how well, it takes you a year to figure out which one it is, and there's three releases. And no, but it looks really cool. And
part of the reason it's so big, too, is it's got GNOME 3 and KDE 4.7 in it.
Yeah. I was going to say.
That was the other big thing, is they opted not to have Unity on there, and they put GNOME 3.
Well, that's because everybody knows Unity just sucks.
It's not that bad.
Okay. You're the only person I know who's using it on a daily basis, dude.
I'm sure there's lots of people.
Yeah, I'm sure there are. You're the only one I know.
You don't think Greg uses, or not Greg, George Kestrel?
Yeah, well, okay, I don't count George because he actually works for Canonical.
Yeah, I was going to name every person that works for Canonical.
So he has to use it. But yeah, I don't. Never mind. Let's not get off into Unity bashing.
All right. The other release this week was Torox 0.1.2012. It's a Gentoo based operating system.
Gentoo. There we go again with that Gentoo based.
Yeah. So are they making you compile
Do you compile everything? Or are there packages? Is there a package management system? Come on.
Really? I wonder if it's a Gentoo base, then they go through and compile everything for you. So all you have to do is install it. It's the pre-compiled.
Oh, maybe.
Instead of you
the pre-compiled Gentoo.
And I wonder if an answer will emerge from this discussion.
Probably not.
You know, I always encourage people to give us listener feedback, and we've had two emails. It was by the same person.
No.
And we thank them very much.
Oh, the
Sigflup sent us that one email.
Yeah, she sent us two emails.
Right. Well, okay, she sent us two, but that other guy sent one right away or early on.
Yeah, it was like episode 3 or something.
Yeah.
And then I never heard back from him again.
No.
Anyway, so sent us an email.
If you know what Gentoo based means.
Yeah. But it's saying it has GNOME 3.2.1.
All right.
Matt thinks it's ExoRoot is the actual name of it. He just wants to switch things around.
Backwards, it's ExoRoot. That's all I noticed. As in kiss, hug, root.
Yeah, well.
Hey, I didn't get much sleep last night. I'm kind of punchy.
And there are a couple of other Linux distributions that also got released. And I think, although it wasn't listed here, and I think we may have mentioned it earlier, that Bachata, which comes from, or the word Bachata apparently is a dance.
I thought it was a piece of bread.
Yeah.
I go to Panera too much.
Me too.
Yeah, it's not.
Ciabatta bread.
Ciabatta. This is bachata. So anyway, but it's a minimal-based, it's actually minimal Debian-based system with fully functional Bash shell. And
It's got no busy box. It's got the real thing.
You are psychic because that's correct. And TCP IP networking, DHCP client, and app setup. And the installation media is pretty minimal. 68 megabytes.
Oh.
So.
Now, are they naming those off because they're saying this is all it has, or are they trying to scramble for things that they put in it? Because I would hope any Linux distro at this point would have TCP/IP.
I would hope so.
Well, it's been in the kernel
since.
Be a good
shape if it didn't.
It's been in the kernel since, 1.2?
We're making standalone high-security machines only.
They said that the installed system will use 160 megabytes of disk space, and then they used a comparison of the Debian 6.0 NetInst media.
NetInstall.
Yeah, that is 191 megabytes. And they said it takes a long time to install and will use at least 330 megabytes of space after installation.
I guess so. If you're doing embedded stuff, then that's important.
That might be. Or maybe that Raspberry Pi thing. Maybe
yeah.
Doing something with that, although you could probably.
Because there's only, what,
256? Hey, speaking of that Raspberry Pi, did you guys see? I can't remember what it's called now, but it was like a USB stick. On one end it had a USB plug. On the other end it had an HDMI plug. And it was the whole computer.
Yeah.
It was like $199 or something like that.
Hmm.
No, I didn't see that.
Wait a minute. The article I read said it would be under $200.
Yeah.
And that's as far as they went because it's not really out for production yet. But it looked super cool. This would be an actual computer in your pocket. All you would need to carry around would be one of those. Do you ever see those things?
Just
you
plug, one of those.
You can plug in and then it's got a USB
and then you,
on it.
And then your phone is your monitor?
If you've got an HDMI input.
Yeah, you have HDMI out.
Yeah, I've got.
HDMI
don't I have
out.
HDMI?
That's out.
Oh, that's out?
Yeah.
Oh.
So you can go to a TV. So you'd have to plug into a TV or a digital monitor.
And, you do have a computer in your pocket.
But you might be able to use your phone as your keyboard. Uh-huh. You might be able to use your phone as your keyboard.
I think the idea is that you plug the USB into a computer or into some other, and that's your power source.
Oh, and then it boots, and then when it boots up, it uses the keyboard and monitor attached to the computer? Via the same USB connection as the power source?
No. Jick.
Magic.
Why would that be magic?
Because there's a whole a host device and peripheral devices, and I don't think that's possible right now.
You're right. After I said it, I'm thinking to myself, I hope nobody calls me on the retardedness of that statement. So
you were just going to try to keep me.
Yeah, I was just going to keep my mouth shut and move on. Thanks, Tony.
So is that something that's going to be released at what point in time?
I don't know. I can't. Okay. I just, in show prep, I read tons and tons of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, my God, that's last night I didn't get done because you know why?
Why?
Because when we get there, you'll know my first story is on SOPA this week, right?
Oh, yeah.
But I found a ton of articles that were quoting Chris Dodd, who's the current head of the MPAA, making these statements in some type of a press release after the blackout day. And I found a ton of websites referencing quotes he made on the 17th right before the blackout day, which were pretty obnoxious, okay?
Oh.
But they were all quoting those quotes from the 17th as if they were made after because you could apply them that way. But that's not true. That's not what happened. So I didn't want to do that. Mm-hmm. So I searched the internet last night for like 6 effing hours.
Holy cow.
Trying to find the post press release, and I couldn't find it anywhere. I found the pre one, the whole thing from the MPAA. I found a PDF, but I couldn't find the post one anywhere. So after that, I gave up on that bent for the for my story and went in another direction.
Do they refer to the quote from the previous head where he was saying how the VCR
is
the equivalent to the Jack the Ripper?
Yeah. No, it was the Boston Strangler.
Oh, the Boston Strangler. Because
that was the story I did last week on SOPA.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But yeah. So I went in a totally different bent with it after 6 freaking hours. I couldn't. My eyes were starting to bleed.
A pre and post article about the House representatives and who was for and who's posing.
I don't have that, but in my SOPA thing, I've got numbers on senators that really are interesting. So.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that would be interesting to see because I have a feeling that it's not along party lines.
It's hilarious. Well, we'll get there.
All right.
The distro of the week, according to DistroWatch, calculated by website hits per day.
What are the distributions breakout this week, Tony?
Let's see. for, oh, I switched it and then it
in the last
back.
7 days.
Yeah, in the last 7 days. Let me hit refresh.
Which is a mistake I made last time when I was looking at 6 months.
Five is,
oh, and then we
Manglia?
Did the way back to 12 years. You remember that? Oh,
12 yeah. years, right? Mm-hmm. Manglia.
Magia.
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 I guess
no
there's
N
no
N or
N
L.
Or L. Magia has 12, 46. And then we got Debian at number 4 with 1401. They're up. Fedora's up with 1521. Ubuntu's up again with 1853. And then Mint.
Gotta love that minty goodness.
With 4046.
Which is more than twice number 2 and number 3 combined.
No.
Yes.
Yes.
No, number 2 and number 3 to combine comes out to like 28.
That's right. And Mint is 40.
Which makes it 46. More than number 2 and number 3 combined.
Said twice number 2 and number 3 combined.
No, I just said more.
All right. Well, all right, we'll play the
we
tapes
do have
after
this recorded.
All right.
Play your cards right. You'll get a breakfast.
Bet me. I'll get a breakfast.
I think we'd be at a stalemate at that point.
I don't think so, because we do have a recording.
All right. So that's what I got there for the distros this week.
Yeah, you know, and speaking of distros and releases and stuff, and this is something we talked about earlier, well, maybe not earlier on the show, but earlier today. Yeah, exactly. Because I had headed off to Softpedia just briefly, and there was... They had posted this announcement of a new Linux operating system based on the popular Ubuntu distribution. And this new one is called Ubuntu Secured Remix 11.10. But apparently there are only three applications on it that are different than the stock Ubuntu, and those are Clean Ubiquity, OS Uninstaller and Boot Repair, or OS Uninstaller and Boot Repair. So the rest of it's just the same.
Hmm.
But it's a brand new Linux operating system.
Secure?
Yeah, that's what they said.
It would make you think that they would add in, like, SE Linux or something.
Mm-hmm. Well, unless that's part of the stock Ubuntu
it's
distribution.
Not,
well, but
I don't think it is. I mean, unless it's...
Oh, and something else that I noticed, too, in some of my research, is that OpenLogic, they're a company or an organization that makes enterprise open source solutions. They came out with a... 2011 trending report for open source software. What they did is they rank, or the report ranks, quote unquote, hot open source projects in three key categories: web and application servers, application frameworks, and databases, and big data. But the top five were HBase, which is an open-source non-relational distributed database that's modeled after Google's Bigtable and written in Java. Second one was Node.js. It's a software system designed for writing highly scalable internet applications, notably web servers. Nginx, which I think some of you are going to know. Mm-hmm. It's a web server and a reverse proxy server for HTTP, SMTP, POP3, and IMAP protocols.
Yeah, it totally kicks mm-hmm. Apache's butt in static web page delivery.
Yep,
yeah,
and number 4 was Apache Hadoop. Is a software framework that supports data-intensive distributed applications under a free license. And the fifth one, I won't read them all, but just the top five, Ruby on Rails, which is a framework for full-stack web application development using the Ruby programming language. So I thought that was kind of interesting. One thing, too, that I've noticed, as far as databases, because that's kind of my background, I'm into databases.
Mm-hmm. Most, into databases?
Yeah, really.
I don't think I've ever heard anyone say that before.
Well, I know. It's my secret.
Databases.
It's my big secret. But I think Amazon this week made an announcement of a non-relational database.
Yeah, that they're going to release for their EC2 mm-hmm. for the cloud.
Yep. Uh-huh. So anyway, but that just a little something about some open source solutions that no doubt run on Linux. That's how I tied it into Linux.
Sweet.
All right.
All right. Well, are we ready for the news? At least my minor contribution to our news this week.
All right.
It's time for the tech news of the week.
First story is, we won a temporary victory in the fight to stop SOPA and PIPA. The U.S. Congress and Senate have indefinitely postponed their respective votes on SOPA and PIPA. The MPAA was stunned by what happened. Former senator and current head of the MPAA had this to say. This was a whole new different game all of a sudden. PIPA and SOPA were considered by many to be a slam dunk. In other words, this was a complete game changer to the way the process has worked in the past. In another statement, Chris Dodd said he blamed a slow process that allowed for the opposition to gather a response. In other words, Mr. Dodd thinks that they needed to rush the bills through before anyone could find
out. Without reading them.
Yeah, yeah. Before anybody could find out what was in them or what they would do.
Yeah, geez.
So, hey, let's take a look at some of the numbers from the blackout. 10 million signatures were gathered on petitions. More than 3 million emails were sent. And these numbers are just from the EFF, the FFTF, and Demand Progress. Wikipedia didn't count. They didn't count the number of emails they generated.
Now, my question, just in terms of those counts, is that that's just from worldwide.
Those emails were sent through the EFF site, mm-hmm. the FFTF site, which stands for, I forget what now.
I mean, where Mary's going is that if you're not a U.S. citizen, then it didn't really count.
Oh, right. But I really don't think too many. I would bet that the vast majority of them came from U.S.
and
citizens.
And I'm a proud member of the EFF.
I did hear a lot of, or I'll let you finish your stats.
Yep, and there were 115,000 plus sites participated in the strike. Four of the top 10 U.S. sites, 13 of the top 100 U.S. sites. This is really just an estimate, as there were many, many small sites that blacked out that probably were not counted, like SMLR. I am sure we were not counted. And one of the best quotes from the blackout was from my son, who said, "A click-through button? Really, Dad? A click-through button?" Let's just say that he was less than impressed with our level of participation. There were over 100,000 phone calls to the Senate. A large portion of these were probably generated by www.tumblr.com, who made you place a call to your senator in order to get to your Tumblr.
Wow.
Because my daughter was really torqued off, and she had to call her senator before she could get to her Tumblr page. And now for my favorite stat of the event, a timeline of the number of senators making public statements against PIPA. As of 11-16-2001, there was one senator. As of 11-17-2011, there were five senators. As of 8 a.m. on 1-18-2012, the day of the blackout, and that's when it started, there were only six senators with public statements opposed to PIPA. As of 8 p.m., when the blackout ended on 1-18-2012, there were 34 senators who had made public anti-PIPA statements.
34 senators?
Senators. Ooh, wow. So that's over the tipping point. That means it can't pass. So.
Very good. Very good.
The MPAA and the RIA are not going to let this go. It will be back. We need to keep vigilant and watch for them to try and sneak this back through. Next time it will be quick, as evidenced by Chris Dodd's above statement.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's.
They'll
agree.
Probably attach it to a farm bill or something.
They'll try and sneak it through somehow. Some type of farm subsidy bill or something like that.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Because then if they vote it down,
then the farmers don't get the money. Farmers, yeah.
The farmers are going to complain. No, but and I don't mean that as bad for the farmers because they do need stuff.
Exactly.
And I grew up in a farming community, so I understand that. But it's dumb how they put two completely opposite things in the same thing.
That's why I'm a full firm believer in the line item veto, because back in the day when all this stuff was written by our founding fathers, they didn't do that. One bill was one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, I just, you got to separate that stuff out.
Yeah.
So we. As Matt said, we did participate in that. If you've been to our website, we did have the click-through button because I thought it was more important to educate the person than to say, "Nope, you're not coming here."
I agree, and I agree, and Mary agreed, and that's why that's what our site had.
Yeah.
However, my son was less than impressed.
but I think Google took that tack too.
Yeah, with the blackout on the word Google, but you can still access the site. Search. So yeah,
that's even right. Our at my work, our internal
and
IT
I would always
site,
compare us to Google.
Yes.
on impact. And I think our blackout, the SMLR blackout, was the tipping point. That was the one that pushed all that over.
Oh, yeah.
I thought I read something on the web, but that was the case.
Yeah, yeah.
But I have control over 5 different websites, and I had them all set up. Actually, a couple more, but the other ones were internal. Nobody ever sees those. So, but I... yeah, like ours, the
internal
MD-Lug.
Internal to who?
To me. It's in my head. no, the MD-Lug website, I had the same pop-up, because it was just a JavaScript you had to add in. And then my website, my BemisHosting.com website, and the Boy Scout troop I was part of, I threw it on theirs. So...
Did you ask the Boy Scout troop first, Tony?
I did. I asked the webmaster or the scoutmaster, which is happens to be my dad. I've been out of scouts for 15 years, and he's still a scoutmaster. Anyway,
we're gonna let that go.
No, come on.
I didn't say anything. I didn't go there.
Anyway, now this next article that Matt has on here, we've all found it separately, but Matt made his own, wrote up his own thing, so
right.
We'll let him talk about it.
NSA releases SE Android. In an email to the SE Linux mailing list, Stephen Smalley of the NSA, which is the National Security Agency here in the U.S., made this simple announcement. We have made an initial public release of SE Android. That was it. That was the extent of his email. SE Android has much stricter access control policies and enhanced sandboxing in comparison to the current version of Android. SE Android, based on SE Linux, this hardened Linux version was released by the NSA in 2000. Many SE Linux components have made their way into the official Linux kernel. It is anticipated that the SE Linux developers are going to further integrate SE Android into Android's application layer security. This will keep compromised programs in the application layer, preventing them from reaching the kernel. These features would prevent exploits such as Jailbreak, Exploit, or Rage Against the Cage that use vulnerabilities in the services and launch processes. As an example, the Jailbreak exploit could be blocked at 6 different steps during its execution, depending on how strict the user sets SE's policies. Mm. The NSA says that the target audience is mobile developers, security experts, and device manufacturers who require stricter access control, like those required by the DoD, which stands for the Department of Defense here in the U.S. It is not certain that SE Android will be used by large commercial manufacturers. It will most likely find a home in enterprise settings that currently deploy SE Linux.
Yeah. You know, I heard a couple podcasters talk about it, that the mobile operating systems now have a sandbox, implemented
yeah,
in already.
Yeah, but it's incredibly easy to break out of.
Right. So I think that's good how they're doing this.
So, yeah. Hey, I'm a big fan of anything that makes it more secure. As long as it doesn't get in the way of actually using the device.
Right.
And now we have Linux, which is the Munich Linux Migration Project, reports success. By this time, they were supposed to have migrated 8,500 desktops. They have, however, migrated over 9,000 workstations. The project, which began in 2003, is worth looking at as an example to anyone considering a large-scale migration to Linux. Linux is both the name of the project and a Linux distribution. Linux is an Ubuntu-based distro certified by the German government, which kind of confused me because Munich is in Germany. For some reason, when I was
Bavaria.
Yeah, when I was writing this, I was thinking that it was
in Russia.
No,
Czechoslovakia.
No, Switzerland.
Austria.
Oh, it was just randomly
named non-German-speaking countries until we got to Austria. But it's not. It's in Germany, so it makes sense now that I'm reading it here live. But that the migration is a success is really an indicator that Linux is finally getting a foothold on government workers' desktops. Florian Scheisel, an architect on the project, said they had underestimated the difficulty of the project and claimed that initially their approach was naive. In 2003, they found there to be 1,000 IT workers in 51 data centers serving 33,000 staff members. A large portion of the problem was that there was not a homogeneous system in place. According to Scheisel, says, well, that doesn't make any sense. But Scheisel had this to say. There no common directory, no common user system or hardware management. Different tools for software distribution and system management. More than 300 apps, many of them redundant, e.g. using Dreamweaver, FrontPage, Fusion, etc. for HTML editing. 21 different Windows clients. Different patch levels, different security concepts. This was Munich's IT situation when Linux started. So before they could even start the migration, they had to completely reorganize IT policy, government IT policy, to create a more homogeneous system that could be migrated. They not only had to consider operating systems and software, but the variety of document formats and templates in use that had to be homogenized first. To help with this, they created WallMux, an open-source template creation plugin for OpenOffice. One of the components most often overlooked in this kind of a migration is the staff. You have to win over the staff for any migration of this magnitude to succeed. So the Linux team started by making smaller steps and breaking the deployment down into smaller deployments and gathering a lot of data before they began. Yeah, but like he says, they didn't even consider when they bid for the project before they could actually get in and look at how the things were laid out that the system was so disjointed and unhomogeneous that they had to homogenize the existing network first before they could start the actual migration to Linux.
Yeah, 33,000 is huge.
And then you wonder why government contracts go over budget.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy.
Because a lot of, if that stuff's not spec'd in originally, then it has to be done.
So, but it's wild. Story. But it's working. So 9,000 desktops so far running Linux.
Well, thanks for that story.
And that's all I have this week for the news.
Well, I was doing a little checking around, and on the internetnews.com site, I found some interesting stats. I guess they're not too surprising, but enterprise Linux use among the world's largest companies, there is about 70, actually almost 80% expect to increase the use of Linux in their enterprise this next year.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty interesting. And what really drove that home was when I was completing I wasn't completing my own performance review. She's very good. I had to acknowledge that I had received my performance review, and there was some issue with something, some aspect of it, and as it turned out, that whole system is being served off Ubuntu and Apache. And I thought, all right, that's so cool at my company. But I thought that was pretty interesting that many companies are expecting to do that.
Well, and I read an article too in my doing my show prep, Mary, mm-hmm. that claims that the vast majority of that, however, is going to be replacing current Unix installations, mm-hmm. as opposed to replacing Windows installations.
Yeah.
So, because Unix.
Are you raining on my parade?
No. Well, I wonder how much it is that they're, like, a lot of mobile is coming into the market too.
Yeah.
And if they're moving to, like, an Android tablet or something people to use.
What this article was saying was that Unix still owns the big, big enterprise.
Yeah.
Yeah. That,
you know, and that's where Linux growth is really, really going to come about, is in replacing those Unix installations that are currently out there.
And, you know, based on what I've seen in corporate America, well, okay, my company, it seems that really that the iPod and the iPad it doesn't seem to me that there's a lot of movement toward Android as the corporate standard. And I was at a meeting last week, not company related, this was another Linux group. And the reason why is because the iPad, of course, and, you know, Apple's technology is so controlled and locked down that corporations feel more comfortable with it versus the Android, at least currently.
Right.
Now, the SE, you know, with that release, I mean, that's going to maybe shift it in that direction.
I don't know. And are corporations really distributing iPads to their employees?
Yes.
I don't think so.
My company is.
I think we may be still coming up.
Are you sure it's
we
not?
May be.
Well, maybe. But no, from what I was reading, a lot of that is from BYOT, companies allowing BYOT, which is bring your own technology. Mm-hmm. So it's when the employee
our
has the iPad.
They were issued iPads.
Really?
You know, I think that's what we're going to be doing is BYOT, and then we're going to have a separate network set up for just iPads. You know, it's something that has like a mix between.
Right.
I don't know if I should be talking about this on the show.
I don't know what company that is.
No. We've said where Tony works. Yeah.
Never mind. There's no such network set up right now.
That was pretty funny, Tony.
Anyway, well, there's still been authentication, so you can't. It'll be extremely hard to hack. Anyway, cool.
Yeah, and the other stat too from this I guess it was sort of a blog post on internetnews.com by Sean Michael Kerner was that you know, as far as contributing from the enterprise Linux perspective, how did people or how did individuals view their contribution or how did they participate? And the 42% is the typical test and submit bugs. 28% were work with our vendors, and then there were 23% no active participation, and then 21% contribute code, and then the rest were just other methods of participating.
Cool.
So yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting.
I'd really like to see that pay what you like, pay what you want type system come out a little bit more. I think that's really good. Did you say that, or was I Zoom? I was like spacing out there for a second.
I didn't hear
you channeled
because
you know.
I don't think I said it.
Yeah, no, okay. I don't think I heard it.
I was thinking
what you want.
Because I'm
no.
Curious.
I meant to bring it up because I thought you hadn't talked about that. But
I know a few weeks ago I think I talked about contributing to projects and that type of thing.
Yeah,
I do because I believe that anyone who devotes time and effort into something and I get use out of it, it's important for me to give back because. I used to try to submit bugs, especially from KDE, and my information was never useful. I had installed the bug reporting symbol utilities and all of that, and it just never really worked.
I don't know. I submitted a LibreOffice bug a couple of months ago that they're still not working on, which is in one of my customers' environments is a horrible situation.
What is it doing?
LibreOffice, if you're running LibreOffice on a Windows 7 or a Windows 7 machine, and I'm sure it does it for other Windows machines, but my only experience is with Windows 7, and then you RDP into that Windows 7 machine, start a LibreOffice session. When you disconnect, the expected behavior would be that when you reconnected to that session, all your programs would still be up and running exactly how you left them, and you could continue your work.
Yep.
LibreOffice crashes every time without fail.
Hmm.
And then you have to recover the document, okay? It's a horrible situation. LibreOffice hasn't done anything to even acknowledge that the bug report has been submitted. It was confirmed by some guy in Czechoslovakia that, yes, this is true and happens. But then there's other ones like Moodle. I submitted a Moodle bug 2 years ago that was then closed by one of the developers as non-reproducible, which was now reopened last week because I got an email saying that my bug had been reopened.
Because somebody
figured out that it was reproducible, and the way I described how to produce it was just not 100%.
Not clear?
Not clear. And so he rewrote the directions on how to reproduce it and reopened it and reassigned it. So
here,
sometimes bugs work. And for somebody to reopen it like that, that means that somebody was actually looking at the closed bugs. Somebody on Moodle's team.
Well, probably
and
what
I like
happened
Moodle
is when
a
they
lot,
so. When they searched, it probably came up and they said, "Oh, you know what? It sounds just like this one, which is closed. Let's reopen it."
Yeah, it's a bug having to do with how Opera, the web browser Opera, interacts with the Moodle administration interface.
Oh, really?
Opera.
Yep, I like Opera.
Because when I was testing Moodle installation for a customer, I was using tons of different browsers on a couple of different platforms. To see how they interact with, to make sure that when, because what Moodle is it's an educational management system, an EMS.
Mm-hmm.
So it's for delivering, it's for managing your students and for distributing courses
curriculum.
Via the internet, curriculum via the internet. So you have to really, when you install something like that, you have to really test it on a wide variety of stuff because you have no idea what the students are going to bring to the game. So I discovered this bug in Opera when you were using Opera with the interface. So.
Oh, very good.
Cool.
And, of course, weekly I supply my little Barnes & Noble Microsoft update. And, you know, on the lawsuit front, there really wasn't a lot of movement. However, I think last week I was threatening to buy a Nook Color and root it. And so since I had Monday off for Martin Luther King Day, that's exactly what I did. And I'm happy to say that it was successful. I followed Matt's suggestion of backing up the stock OS that the Nook Color comes with. The version that I installed was from CyanogenMod mod, and it works just fine. One thing I noticed, of course, is that you still get things like the phone, you know, the phone icons and all of that, which out of curiosity I pressed, and no surprise, there was no mobile provider available. But what's really nice is that the Nook Color does have a slot for the micro SD card. So I think I'm going to, right now I think I'm carrying about a 4 gig one in here. I'm going to put some more movies on there and
just load it up with a 64 yep. gigabyte card.
Yeah, yep, exactly, and have a whole bunch of stuff on there. Now I access the Barnes & Noble book interface from the Android Market rather than have it directly on there. So, but it was a success, and cool. I'll probably throw some coins as I am prone to do, throw some a donation their way. Not Barnes & Noble. They'll get enough donation.
CyanogenMod.
Yep, exactly. So
that's cool.
Yeah, I wanted to share that.
So. Yeah. Yeah, the other thing's not to turn this into Droid Nation, but for the Android, you can download other markets. And like the Amazon Marketplace, you can or Market, whatever they call it,
for some of
App Store.
Mm-hmm. Or like I have a I have a Pan Digital, and you really can't do a lot outside of Pan. What Pan?
Well,
Digital
I mean, it's an actual website. You go to their website, you download the app, and you install it, and then you get their whole marketplace or whatever they call it. I can't remember what they call it, but then they do like a free app of the day. And then you can download, there's books and there's different programs. And a lot of them, like if they go for $10, then you get it for free. So it's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so check it out.
Great, thanks.
I've got a couple little notes here since Matt stole my first article. talking about SOPA, I ran across this video. It's on TED.com. And it talks about why SOPA is a bad idea. And I thought this was the best explanation. I have heard a lot of people, a lot of different podcasts, a lot of technical people talk about it. And I understand how it works, but it was hard for me to explain to like my wife and other people that I know how it's bad and the differences and what it does. And this is a really good explanation of, you know, for either my friends to see, or it was gave me ideas of how I can explain it. And it's just the simple ways to explain DNS and IP. And it's a 13-minute video, so you should really check it out. It's really cool.
The best video I think I found on SOPA, though, was from Colbert. Okay. So if you just Google ColbertNation.com and Stop Online Piracy Act, there are actually two videos, one where Colbert's ranting about SOPA PIPA, and the other is where he actually has a debate between a pro and an anti-guy. Danny Goldberg is the pro guy. He's with some type – he's either with like RIA or MPAA in some fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Jonathan Zittrain, who is a internet guy from MIT, saying how horrible it is and how it will break the internet. And it's a debate kind of back and forth between those two guys. But, yeah, Colbert Nation's where you want to go for that, baby.
Yeah. Funny. Well, thanks for that, Matt. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah. Then the other link I found was it isn't anything new, but I didn't know about this. And, well, maybe I'd heard of it somewhere, but it was kind of like never really thought about it. But there's this video. They talk about different types of online attack, but one of them was like his intro was about how government can, like, how things have changed and people just take it for granted now, but it's really how they're imposing on our privacy. And one of them was just your printer. Every page you print, it prints like real light, really low yellow dots all over it. And that makes an unique signature for every single inkjet. So they can say, you printed this, and come back to you. And I thought that was... it was amazing that I never knew that.
Actually, that's been out for years.
Yeah, and if you're a big fan of watching those CSI type shows, which I am, mm-hmm. you would have known that. so yeah.
Yeah, it's because I remember. Oh my God, maybe 10 years.
Yeah,
at
it's
least.
Been a long time.
It makes me glad that I use a black and white laser at home.
They have their own ways.
Yeah, I know.
With them, it's not so much an easily given, but if they have something that was printed and the printer, they can say, yes, this was definitely printed on that printer. Because with laser printers, they use drum.
Yeah, scratches.
Yeah, drum scratches. So
I'll just swap the drum
kinda
every
like
day.
Ballistics. Kind of like ballistics.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
And you're talking about, like, internet attacks, though. You would think that nobody would ever fall for a phishing scam, right? Right?
Yeah.
A friend of mine's wife this week, he sends me an email and goes, hey, look at this email. It's not his wife. It's his significant other. They're not married. But they've been together for like 15 years or something. It's crazy. But anyway.
He needs to pop the question.
I bug him all the time about it. But anyway, he sends me this email, and I can't believe when I read it that she actually responded to this. It's like, AT&T is deleting all of their unused accounts, so please respond to this email by this date and time with all this information about your account, or you will be deleted. AT&T knows who their customers are. Come on. And it came from a Yahoo email address. Oh. And she responded to it.
Well, you know, AT&T and Yahoo is...
they are together.
They're together.
Yeah, but AT&T is never going to send an official communication from an at yahoo.com
no.
email address.
Right. And typically they would.
Because I'm an AT&T customer. I know where their emails come from.
Well, and they would probably include your name, too, because I know I get information from PayPal, and I know I can tell the real ones because it's got my real name there versus these other ones that says your PayPal account has been limited.
Yep.
And then you look at the email address or the chain of custody.
And
for
you can't always look at the like from when it says from, because that can be spoofed so easy. Mm-hmm. You have to actually look at the headers.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, wait a minute. This one in the from field did say yahoo.com.
Oh man. You know what I always look at is when they say click here. I always hover over that
and see where it says.
And then, it says like facebook.com is the link, but then you look at it, it's like facebook. Ouji Buji Stan died.
Yeah, exactly. Somewhere in the old Soviet republic. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Uzbeki Beki Stan?
Yes, Uzbeki Beki Stan.
That's unfortunate. So,
I don't know. He sent me this email last night.
So was it like a drive-by Trojan download or something?
No. Well, and the only information they stole was all of their AT&T internet account information. So I don't know what they could do with it other than... Then use their internet account.
Well,
so
can you charge things to your your phone bill?
No, it's not the phone. It's just their internet account.
Hmm.
Well, that does does give you access to the email.
So I don't know, but I emailed him back right away.
Well,
believe she was that stupid.
A lot of people use the same username password for other things, so they can take that same password and try it against
and try it on a bunch of other stuff.
Other things that are in the email box, maybe.
Yeah. Right.
Yep.
So,
yeah. Did they? Anyway. Was one of the fields on there? What other usernames do you use on other sites?
No, it was stupid. So,
oh man.
Here, I can pull it up though. I bet I have it in my trash though, because it's Gmail. So in Gmail, we don't ever actually throw anything away. So Gmail's loading. Gmail's loading. Gmail's loading. There we go. Let's see.
Now, you don't actually throw anything away?
I say delete it, but then Gmail doesn't actually throw it away.
They put it in an archive?
Yeah, it just puts it in a separate folder. It's trash folder.
It's
so when the feds come
with their
subpoenas
warrant.
And warrants? And,
yeah.
Okay.
Let's see.
So that was my thought, too, is I'll put my tinfoil hat on for a second and I want to run my own web mail server so that, you know, anybody, I mean, you can, it's a lot harder to sort through all the internet traffic that my ISP routes, because they can store my emails through that, because they're all just plain text. But it's a lot easier to just go to Google and say, hey, give me all the emails from this user. So if I have my own mail server, see, that's why I go. I use Linux.
Okay, this is what it said. This is what their phishing scam said. It said, due to the congestion in all users and removal of all unused accounts. So first of all, whoever wrote this, English is not their first language.
Yeah.
Okay, we would be shutting down all unused accounts. You will have to confirm your email by filling out your login info below. After clicking the reply button, or your account will be suspended within 24 hours for security reasons.
24 hours?
Yes. And then as for your username, your password, your date of birth, your occupation, and your country or territory. After following the instructions in the sheet, your account will not be interrupted and will continue as normal. And then they put some type of an AT&T intellectual property, all rights reserved, yada, yada, yada at the bottom. But the address it came from, for anybody out there who wants to follow up on this stuff, was bandaratilaka@yahoo.com. That is BANDARATI LLAKEH@yahoo.com.
Wow.
So, it was hilarious. And my response to him was, dude, she just got fished. How stupid do you have to be? It is from a freaking Yahoo email address. So, yeah.
Does it have their logo and stuff on there?
It does.
Yeah.
But I can go right now and make up an email from IBM. I mean, come on.
Exactly.
How hard is it to grab somebody's logo off the internet?
Not too hard, but, you know, for people who don't, who aren't tech savvy or don't stay plugged into that.
Okay, now there's a difference between tech savvy and just gullible. I think if you fall for something like that, you're down below tech savvy and in the just gullible range. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
It makes me wonder why phishing hasn't come about earlier. You know, what if you get a piece of mail and, snail mail, you get something saying it's from your from your utilities, and you need to send this back. Just use the envelope, and just stamp it and send it back, and it has like an address in the Bahamas or.
Yeah.
Maybe that's be my next.
Hey, you're hitting on something there, Tony.
All right.
All right. Well.
That's all I actually have for this week.
Yeah, I think I've pretty much gone through my news reports and activities.
All right. Well, it sounds good. I got a little bit of music to leave with, but we'll say goodbye.
Bye.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye. So we got, I think it's Asty, A-S-T-Y, from Flux by Broken Cities.
Now, before you flip over to it, how do you select this? Just in 25 words or less, how do you select it? Share that with us.
A lot of the stuff comes from Jamendo. Jamendo?
Okay.
I really like that.
I subscribed to them for a while, I think.
Featured music of the week. Thank you. You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This has been Episode 15 for the week of January 22nd, 2012.
Yeah. What? Is that the theme song again?
It's the Doom song from GUR again, yes.
Man,
I forget what I was looking for.
We stalled for you.
I know
we
you stalled
for you. There's the pressure.
It was the pressure. The pressure got to me. I can't find it now. I installed this stupid Zim and GUR soundboard on my 10 digital. And one of the things was, I can't
a series of
out.
Little audio quotes
yeah,
that
yeah,
were
it's a sound,
kind
it's
of absurd,
a
but kind of fun.
But and one of them said, I I did not mean to play Why Was There Bacon in the Soap? I was looking for. One of them said, I really love this show. And I can't find it. So a soundboard is no good unless you are ready.
Speaking of soundboards, the Linux Outlaws was running
pauses.
Their new soundboard.
Oh, are they?
And he had quotes from this one a wrestler, I think, back in the day that
here's a pertinent one for right now.
I guess I'm just not smart enough.
I guess so.
All right, so we left off where Tony was going to. Transition us to some music.
Some type of wacky music.
Before we veered off course with Matt.
I go to the Jamendo website.
It was quite the veer, let me tell you.
And I look at the license, make sure it's okay, because they can sort by Creative Commons license. And I just randomly click on artists that may sound good. And if it sounds good to me, then I play it. So if I get any suggestions
or requests.
You know what?
I'm holding the freaking thing in landscape mode, so I'm not seeing everything.
Oh, jeez.
It said something about stupid something earlier.
Stupid stinking humans.
You're going to have to do some heavy editing.
Nah, let this all ride. Where was it? Keep going. Come on. Stall.
We're at an hour 20 right now.
Hour 20.
Oh, you'll be able to.
All right, I can't find it.
Go to the music. We'll try this next time.
Here it comes.